And welcome to another edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're tickling your eardrums with the very kind assistance of oldfootballshirts.com. Well, nothing says romance of the Premier League more than Stoke at home on a Monday night. But, alas, rather than the dull game of attrition that was predicted, a game of football broke out and the spoils were shared in a 2-2 draw. The less said about the ref, the better.
Really?
This coming week, though, it's probably the most anticipated since the fixtures came out. First, we head to Old Trafford to face a United side who are trying to chase down their City rivals and have the likes of Zlatan back and Paul Pogba to face the mighty Albion. And then on Tuesday, the fire extinguishers are at the ready and as the burning smell from up the road wafts over the Amex. Or, alternatively, then on Tuesday, they who cannot be named visit the Amex for what will be the first time in the top flight since April 1981. And let's hope for the same result. So joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Marcus Hancock. So Marcus, it's been a while since you've been in, actually.
Has it? When was the last time? It must have been just before the season started, or was it?
Was it really that long ago? Were you in for the opening game of the season?
Yes.
Sausage Rolls Day?
No, I wasn't. No. I had a prior appointment. So,
okay, well,
and I know that if I'd have been there, you would have eaten. You know, I would have eaten all the sausage rolls, not you, Alan. So,
as it happened, Bob Booker ate them all, and Malcolm Stewart.
Right, got you. So, anyway, well, welcome back. This is Radio Reverb at the County Hospital. So, yeah. It's interesting, actually, AD said, the less said about the referee, the better, from the Stoke game. We won't have a show if we really took him up on that. So, anyway, Marcus, welcome back.
Thank you.
We got there in the end.
But we are going to have a story so far a little bit later on of the season. But we do have to talk about Stoke. I mean, it was... we all thought it was going to be dull, boring, and we're all coming to see Peter Crouch. But it was you might not have done, but that's what the press were predicting. And
that's what I was predicting in my head. The nillest of nil nils, I think.
You actually said that on social media as well. That's what you're expecting.
Well, just because you know that we're not top of the table fodder. I mean, if you're going to look at it that way, I mean, the way it's panned out, right against Stoke, you know, fascinating for the neutrals to watch, whereas Liverpool versus Manchester United, which is forever the match of the season, was an absolute bore fest. I mean, you know, Mogadon was sponsoring that. It was, so no, there is no such thing as considering what's you always think West Brom against Stoke is the actual benchmark of going to be absolute tedium boredom. Maybe it is, but you can't guarantee that. It's just absolute twaddle marketing hype.
Well,
I'm just revving up to rant here, mate.
Well, before the game, Ash Braddock, hi Ash, I know you listen. He was saying that for the neutral, we can't see anyone else drumming up any more excitement other than Albion and Stoke fans.
Well, this is all about the sort of nature of brainwashed marketing. Is it, you know, Brighton against Stoke, it's going to be dull. Stoke are the kind of the standard unit of measurement for dullness in football, and Brighton are not going to be adding anything to that. Hmm. Wrong!
Okay, well, let us start at the beginning. And we were unchanged for the fourth game in a row, Marcus.
Really? Fourth game in a row.
That's not very Houghton-esque, is it?
No, that surprises me. But then again, it's a keep the shirt policy, isn't it? Mm. So, and it's been proven right. So that must have been since the West Ham game then,
yeah,
wouldn't it? West Ham
it was, yeah, must was be. Yeah. But perhaps the biggest surprise was the fact that there was still no Bulldog or Kyle on the bench.
Yeah, but I think they're easing them back to full fitness. And at the moment, we probably don't need them as much as we probably thought we did at the beginning of the season. Because the guys who are currently in the first team squad and even on the bench are doing a damn fine job, so carry on nursing is what I say.
But an amazing stat is that Sam Bulldog's not made his Premier League debut for anyone.
Well,
too bad.
Yeah, basically. Shouldn't have got injured then, should you, mate? You know, it's as simple as that, really.
No,
all joking aside.
Fair enough. I mean,
and that's why all the ladies love Marcus Hancock's bedside manner.
God, I thought we were supposed to be ranting. No, it's slightly concerning that we have no apparent centre midfield cover. I'm sure that someone could drop into place if absolutely necessary.
Well, we were talking
about
John
Morley
about
this
the other day. We have got Jason Malumbi.
Yeah, but they're not on the bench. We're not on the bench. So if you're going to have, if it's Kyle is evidently just sort of not in Houghton's plans for the time being. Otherwise, he would be on the bench. Like I say, it could be easing him back in. Maybe he's not ready. Who knows? But we are back to what you're quite right with what John Morling said. It's got to be Houghton will not put anyone into the top 18 until such time as he totally trusts them to be ready. Mm. What the issue is with Kyle, we don't know. Is he still struggling with fitness? Is he still struggling for form when he is playing? Has he taken one step back where he's taken two steps forward? We don't know. Point is, he's not ready. So there's not really sort of much concern. Well, there's not much time to be wasted on sort of worrying about why they're not there. I mean, this is the moment that, because we're doing okay, that you think, oh, it's not as though we don't need Kyle, but then the automatic thing comes once we start losing a few games, we're dropping down the table and we start, you know, looking over our shoulders at the trapdoor again. That's when people start moaning, why isn't Kyle playing? Well, for the same reason he wasn't playing when we were doing well. Evidently not ready. Houghton's not happy with him to be picked yet. If he is, great, good for him. But until then, not worth worrying
Marcus?
About.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, if Stevens or Proper were injured, you know,
or suspended,
yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, that's the other thing. With Sidwell still not near to being in the first team again. Gross can play centre midfield as well. That then means you have to tinker with the Gross position and who plays in a Gross position. But Izzy Brown's the one
that's been coming on for Gross in.
Well, this is it. You would probably slot Izzy Brown in there, or maybe March or not, or something. Just if you had to tinker with the team, Gross would be the natural sort of first team choice to slot into. Because I believe he's fulfilled that position before.
Absolutely.
For a previous club. He would be the most natural of the not playing in centre midfield players we've got.
So I think we've got a few more options up front in the Gross type role. Yeah. I mean, obviously Baldock is the one that we're all looking at, but I think Izzy Brown makes a perfectly decent contribution up front there. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Not overly worried. I mean, Gross is the man, but you know, Brown will do.
Okay. Well, one midfielder he started very, very slowly, but he's grown into being a very good Premier League player, which is Dale Stevens.
They all started slowly, mate. Everyone started, but with the exception probably March and Bruno on that first day against Man City, everyone started slowly. Rabbits in headlights. No, Stevens has been playing well for the last four or five games. People saying, oh, this is the day he arrived. No, he arrived back in September. It took everyone else about half a dozen games to get into it, but Stevens arrived. It's a case of how much Proper took. He took probably about three or four games to get into it. The point is that because we're now picking up results, it shows the effect of what Proper and Stevens are actually doing.
But I mean, with Marcus, I mean, with Davey Proper, I mean, you've got people do forget this, that it's a player coming into a new country, into a new league, getting used to the way that the games are going to go, the famous speed and tenacity of the Premier League. It takes players a bit of time to get into it, and you could put Jose Squerdo into that category as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be fair, I think even Proper himself, after that Man City game, I was one of the first to say,
were you going to take him and stick him in your car and drive him back to Amsterdam?
You know what? Near enough, I would have done that with Phil probably as my co-passenger on the way there. Because, I mean, he was kicking the ball just the way it was facing. It's like, oh my God, we spent 10 million quid on this. But having said that, since then, he's come on absolute leaps and bounds. It obviously took him a while to get adjusted.
Yeah. You know, it took everyone a while.
It took everyone a while. I remember actually the Ahan show, because we talked about Proper and we talked about how well Stevens had sort of settled into the side by then. He'd decided to join the Premier League party, albeit a few games later. I think just about everybody has settled in quite comfortably now.
I think there's hardly anyone that actually worries me at the moment.
Yeah, again,
it's the lack of cover in central midfield. But apart from that, none of the first 18 worry me.
Yeah, exactly. And if we had if we had Sidwell and Kyle back, then even better. You know, that's a really good squad. Absolutely. Again, I know they still want to strengthen in the forward areas, and you know, hopefully they'll do that in January. But you know, as it stands at the moment,
we're there's a reason why we're ninth. You know, I mean, all right, the real argument about, you know, how good you are is actually over the 38 games, but you know, we're just over a quarter or nearly a third of the way into the season. We've spent the last two or three games in the top half. There are clearly several teams that are worse than us. They may actually get round to sorting themselves out eventually, but hey, we've had a head start. We've got a few points on the board. We've got a little bit of a nest egg. You know, yeah, we looked terrifying at the beginning, but if you take just our last eight games, hey, you know, that's you know, what do you call it, Europa League form.
Absolutely, I agree. I think, to be honest with you, you could kind of say our season started with Watford away. Man City was a write-off anyway, because
as
everybody
was Leicester.
Loses to Man City. And Leicester was just... Leicester were nothing special that day, I've got to be honest. But again, I think it was still finding a way in the Premier League, and I think it was still...
Well, again, I mean, there was a lot of criticisms about Matty Ryan early doors, and I will hold my hands up to saying I was wrong about that. But the Leicester game, there was...
absolutely. And again, you know, you write that off, and, you know, but getting that point at Watford, oh, yes, it was down to 10 men, yes, we should have won, but no, we shouldn't, and, you know, no, we didn't, and we hit
it's
the
just,
bar.
Well, thankfully, Watford
and
we had, were dreadful
and
that
Watford
day.
Watford were dreadful that day because they've since beaten Arsenal and are not far behind us. I think, any, is it goal difference or a point behind us?
No, I think they're ahead
like
of us
that?
Now,
aren't
they? They've overtaken us by beating West Ham the other day.
Yeah, so, well, you know, so a point away at Watford wasn't a bad, you know, and then and that kick-started our season, basically.
Yes, I mean, we then turned West Brom over and, you know, I think that's really, you know,
and the rest
people
of the
blind me through.
Yeah.
I mean, it still maddens me to a point how lack of credit we get for wins like that.
Yeah, I
mean,
agree.
You know, West Ham were dreadful, Swansea were dreadful, West Brom were dreadful.
Yeah,
you know, sorry, we turned up and beat who was there.
Two of those three have now since shed their managers, though.
How embarrassing is that for them? Yeah. With all due respect, they should be beating teams like us.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You didn't. Yeah. In fact, West Brom, you got stuffed. West Ham, you got stuffed. In fact, can we play a team every week that's got West at the beginning?
Well, we will be again in 19th of January.
Yes. If we get West and Supermare in the cut, we're laughing. They're the Seagulls as well, by the way.
West Chiltington can be played there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. it's. Listen, the start that we've made, and you know, yes, we're a little bit frustrated that we didn't actually beat Stoke City because, you know, they had some decent players, but I personally think that where Brighton actually is, the team is better than the sum of its parts. I think that Stoke City is not as good as the sum of its parts. They've got some very good players, and they're really not firing on all cylinders.
But, I mean, it does show how far we've come, though, Marcus, because, I mean, our home form is thus that we go into any game against anyone at the moment thinking, right, look, we've got a chance in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody...
Especially at home.
I mean, everybody's there for the taking. I know there's that little mini league that everybody talks about, so you kind of write off Man City, possibly Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea, but then after that, Arsenal, maybe Spurs, but then after that, it's sort of, I think, you know, you're right, we don't need to fear anybody, we don't need to fear anybody at home, and at the moment, so it's proven, we don't need to fear anybody away either.
Not quite.
You know, we've had some good results away from home, and sounding like Chris Eaton here, you know, good results away from home, good performances, we've looked solid. Optimism for the rest of the season.
Now, do you think that Antti Knockaert has turned up to the party?
Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Everton, he was excellent. He really did play very well there. And, you know, that was one of those games where you probably look at and think that was 2 points dropped because of the Bruno elbow, which obviously was a, you know, penalty, albeit even Everton didn't appeal. But then Southampton was a point gained because we were 1-0 down, and Stoke... Yeah, well, we all know what happened there. But having said that, yes, Anthony, to be fair, has been intermittent. He's actually been, I think, for me, better away from home than at home, bar the Everton game.
He's been targeted as well.
I think that's probably part of the...
You consider how many bees around the honeypot there were when he got the ball compared to how much Izquierdo had the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, admittedly, it was Diouf not doing his job, but, you know, Izquierdo had the freedom of the Amex in the first half, didn't he?
Let's talk about Jose then, because, I mean, he has flattered to deceive a little bit. I mean, he himself, by his own admission, has said that he's only up to about 60 to 70% of what he's capable of at the moment.
What language did he use for that?
Spanish, probably. I don't know.
Just thinking, you know, if you can actually sort of have some accurate measurement, you can.
He was talking to our good friend Brian Owen, who, absolutely, totally fluent in Spanish.
Yes.
Okay, to the point where we thought that who's this Spanish bloke in the thing?
They can actually talk about over the moon, Bruno.
I think with Jose is he's obviously suffering from maybe not having a full pre-season because, you know, a lot of players need a good pre-season to just hit the ground running. And again, Knockaert's another one who's possibly suffered from not having a full pre-season anyway. But his time will come, as Alan said. He's been sort of doubled up on at home, whereas away he's been given a little bit more freedom. Because don't forget, he set up, I think it was his cross for Murray's goal against Swansea.
Yes, so, it was. Yep.
You know, so he's performing, you know, and it's just, as I say, at home, maybe not, but that could be because of the opposition have singled him out. Jose, he will come good. At the moment, he's a bit Kazenga Luwalua, let's be honest. He's a bit sort of, you know, explosive pace, and he's got that wicked
shot
on him.
End up in Hove.
Or in the back of the net, as proved with West Ham away. Yeah. But I think it's because he hasn't had a full pre-season. But he's now, you know, featuring in games. He must have been a bit annoyed when he joined. Cute and said, well, you're on the bench, mate, and Solly March has got the shirt.
Well, yeah. No, I also noticed there was a bunch of people from Bruges turned up for the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was there? Brilliant.
Yeah, there was a few people with the Bruges.
There's been a few people from all over the place, actually.
Well, they're looking at their old mucker to see how he's getting on. You
actually,
know.
Conversely, Piers and a few of the others are actually going over to Bruges in January.
Beautiful city.
To visit, and Jamie and stuff, to visit Bruges. So sort of Brighton fans are reciprocating.
Fair enough. Yeah, just don't take Colin Farrell with you.
I'm glad you went with that joke, because mine was
terrible. I'm sure it'd be awful. Just guaranteed.
Okay, but there was some our midfielders have played some absolutely beautiful balls in this game.
We're talking about the Stoke game here.
Yeah. I mean, Dale Stevens was pinging it all over the place, and there was one in particular from Davy Purper who squared over free. It was just a beautiful weighted pass.
There seemed to be a slight change in what Purper and Stevens were doing. I think the way that Stoke City set up, and they did set up very defensively with a fair whack of time wasting, you know, which is a kind of a backhanded compliment, although intensely irritating. Yeah. They set up with a back five, a back four when we had the ball that were actually sort of only sat 10 yards in front of them, allowing very little space in between. You know, so they've kind of got this defensive masterclass themselves. And actually, I'll come back to this, but as much as we were saying, yes, we're very tight and we're very disciplined at in our defensive duties, I actually thought this was one of our more sloppy defensive games.
Okay, well,
but that's not the point I'm making. Sorry. Getting back to Stevens and Purper, there were some new passes that previously we hadn't seen in their armoury. Those zinging forward ones to forwards on the edge of the area. Previously there was an awful lot of stuff going side to side, and there still was, but there was a few that were zinging forward, and I can't help feeling that actually Stevens is not the right person to do that. He is capable of doing it. Actually, I would have preferred to have had Gross and Stevens swapping place, where Gross can put the ping pass
to Stevens, who then
could be bombing forward a bit. Yeah. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Because
Stevens does know where the goal is. I know he hasn't scored much in the last couple of years, but a couple of seasons he's weighed in with four or five headers,
absolutely,
late runs into the box, you know, shots from outside the
area.
Absolutely,
Wigan last year.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, if there is this notion of Stevens and Gross swapping over now and again, but I don't think that's going to happen, because I think Stevens is actually probably being told to be far more disciplined with his defensive duties.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you mentioned lax defending there, so that leads nicely on to the first Stoke goal, where a long ball was lofted. was lofted straight down the middle. Duffy appealed for offside, but he was wrong, and Tuba Moting dumps Dunk on his arse, frankly. And fires home.
Well,
dare I say it, with a plum?
Lewis Dunk he did lose it. The ball was coming over his shoulder, and that's as soon as I saw him looking at the ball over his shoulder, I'm thinking you're going to lose your bearings here.
Either
try and swing your leg and hoof it.
Yeah.
As soon as you saw that, I thought there's trouble. But yeah, the forward got a little bit lucky, in as much as the ball came off Dunk's back of his heel and it almost trapped it for him. But as you say, finished with.
I mean, as a case in point,
aplomb.
Duffy did appeal for offside, and he kind of stopped when he was doing so.
Yeah, but Dunk was tracking his man, though. They wouldn't have made any difference.
If he had carried on his run, he could have possibly got there.
No, he was nowhere near it. He was absolutely nowhere near it.
Yeah,
it was just a run that it was Dunk's to deal with. I mean, it was a good ball. I mean, don't get me wrong, Shaqiri. All right, he might look like a potato, but he is actually a very, very good player. He has probably the weirdest shaped body of any footballer.
Yeah, he does.
His legs are wider than you, and that's saying something.
Yeah. Yeah, that is saying a lot. He's an excellent footballer. I mean, I think he scored an absolute world. Was it an overhead kick, a worldie, in the Euro Championships?
Yeah, he got like the goal of the tournament. Yeah.
Which makes you think, what on earth is he doing at Stoke City? But yes, it was. I'm grudgingly admitting it was a good goal, but I can't help feeling that Lewis Dunk should have done a bit better.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, we give the striker credit. It was a good finish.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although that goal celebration thing, what the hell was all that about?
Deary me.
Dancey thing on...
Well, the thing is, they went and Morris celebrated and then did their
dance. I know.
Well, we'll talk about that goal in a minute. Oh,
they did it twice.
They did it twice. That's the point. They did it twice.
Well, I missed it the first time.
Oh, yeah.
That's inciting a riot, I tell you. Inciting a riot. Yes. Okay, well, this is the point where the ref was very befitting of his name, and he rolled up a trouser leg, donned a stupid hat, and had a silly handshake. And Mr. Mason did not give a penalty with the help of his very blinded referee linesman.
Rant. Go on, do you want to go first, Marcus?
It was an appalling mistake by both the linesman and the referee. Bearing in mind, they're both in very close proximity to that incident.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the West Stand upper and I'm level with the North Stand, and obviously it happened at the South Stand area.
But you must have seen it since.
But even the Stoke, none of the Stoke players, even, you know, I think the way they sort of moved, or after the sort of, you know, before the referee had made his decision, they almost looked like, yeah, that's a penalty. Yeah. We're just going to take this one on the chin.
Turned away a little bit, you know, hands on head kind of thing.
Yeah, it was almost to say, any minute now, the referee's going to give it. And then he didn't. And then you think, okay, the referee hasn't given it, but what about you, Mr. Linesman? So let's not blame the referee here. Let's blame the linesman as well, because he should have seen it. That flag should have been across his chest. Absolutely.
Actually, hang on. The slams on break. They don't do that anymore.
Do they not?
No, they just flag and then...
Flaggy thing. But
yeah,
okay.
Just to rewind a second further there, because after Murray was brought down, the ref actually pointed for a corner.
Which was even worse. I mean, because he just compounded his
and
mistake.
Then, and he compounded his mistake. And then you think, well, okay, fair enough. So surely you need to book Murray for diving then.
Well...
Or something, just, you know.
Well, no.
Complete.
No, you didn't, because he originally signalled for a corner. It therefore makes out that Shawcross has got the tackle in.
Yeah,
the fact that actually Murray's grabbed the ball and actually brought it out under his control before it's gone out of play. That's when the linesman flagged, and this is what I was saying. That's when the linesman flagged and said, "Look, it's not a corner. It hasn't gone out of play. He's actually caught it."
Right.
And therefore, it should be a free kick, which is what was given. It was a free kick was given, not for the perceived dive. It was for handball.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So, but the point is that I think initially, if he gave a corner, fine. That implies that he felt that Shawcross got the ball. He missed it by about a foot. But if he's behind the line of where it is, did he get it? Didn't he get it? Did the ball move that little bit? Yeah. Okay. You're not 100% sure. You think, okay, well, benefit of the doubt. Really not sure. Give a corner. And suffer the slings and arrows later.
Yeah.
But the fact that the ball didn't go out...
Yeah,
I mean, if he had got a touch on the ball, then Murray probably wouldn't have been able to grab it on account of the fact that it had actually gone out of his reach.
Just to move this on further...
No,
then,
we're sticking with this.
Is this a typical situation that VAR should be used?
I cannot actually fathom the concept of VAR coming into football. It's the thin end of the wedge. When it's a fairly straightforward thing like that, just the fact that the referee has a get-out-of-jail-free card that says to his fourth, can you have a look at that, please, mate? I'm not 100% sure. They're screaming blue murder for this. Mm. They're absolutely sure. And then you realise, look at it, and actually Shawcross did get it. You know, that's when it's clear-cut as that, then it can work, but that's only giving the referee a get-out-of-jail-free card. When it then goes on to the extra pressure that a forward team or a defending team could put on the referee, whether it's gone for offside, whether it's gone for the incident where was that a penalty, and then 45 seconds later go up the other end and score a goal, no, you've got to take it back. There are just so many instances where it's not clear-cut that you're going to have this farce, this absolute farce of you not being able to get home to your partner and your daughter much before 1 o'clock in the morning because the games would just go on and on and on.
Like American football.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Or baseball. Yeah.
And the thing is, all right, we're there to be entertained because part of what we like here with the football, and there's sometimes 3 or 4 minutes at the end of the game, is you want the momentum. You don't want the time wasting
You want the momentum.
Yeah. You want the goalkeeper to get on with it.
You want the opportunity to rant in the pub afterwards.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. I think they've gone as far as
the human error.
They've gone as far as they can with goal line technology. I'm an advocate of
that. I'm fine with that.
That's an instant thing. You know, the beep on the watch. Yep. You know, goal. sorry, yeah. lads, that fine. But yeah,
if you're talking about something which was possibly a foul, possibly not a foul, the point about the rules is they say in the opinion of the referee. Yeah. Now, if you then give that to an arbiter who's watching on a TV screen, you're taking away all the decision from the referee. You're not assisting the referee; you're taking away the decision because and asking another person to give their opinion.
Absolutely,
and you could actually, I mean. All right, this one against Stoke was a clear-cut one. But you think of other ones, which are, that was never a pen. No, I thought it was. There was contact. Well, I thought it was a bit aggressive.
Well, this is what we've this seen in countries that are doing the trial. I mean, in one of the first instances where it was trialed, which is an international game between France and Spain, I believe.
Yes.
And VAR was used twice and that correctly. But it's been trialed.
In what way were they? What were the circumstances which you used? Was it for a sign?
One was a penalty and one was a disallowed goal.
When you say a penalty, what was it? A foul? Was it a handball? Was it the
ref didn't give it, but the video official did give the penalty.
Okay, and how did it come about?
I don't know.
Well, no, this is what I'm asking. No, this is what I'm asking is that how on earth is it actually properly administered? There's a fourth official saying, listen, John, he's saying to the referee, you need to actually sort this out because, in which case you're actually then, all right, you've got an assistant. Listen, there's far too many variables to make this actually fundamentally work well. I suspect that what they're doing is they're trialling it in order to say thanks, but no thanks.
Okay, well, let's move it on to Glenn Murray. And was he lucky to stay on?
Lucky, yes.
I think in hindsight, yes, I think he was. Because it was like, oh, no, don't get sent off now.
No, you know, and don't get sent off ever.
And maybe that was the referee realising he should have given a penalty, and so therefore
was that the red mist, Marcus?
I don't know.
Sorry, of course, it was the red mist.
Oh, it was undoubtedly the red mist. I mean, he was quite clearly, you know, he was angry that he didn't get a penalty because maybe even Shawcross said should have been a penalty, Glenn. Sorry,
I'm just like wondering if Shawcross said that to Murray during the game. Yeah, that should have been a penalty. Yeah, that would have wound Glenn up even more.
Maybe he did. You know, I mean, there's always a bit of that.
I think it was. It wasn't. All right, you can't really mitigate. It wasn't studs showing. It wasn't feet off the ground or anything like that.
It was scissors, though.
It was. Yeah. It was the trailing leg that caught him. The first one missed him. The trailing leg caught him. And it was. I think someone else put it on out there and said it was yellow and a half.
Yeah.
You know. So that was my cop out. But if it had been given red, you could think, well. But having said that, I think that the bar that Lee Mason himself set for players to get booked, the number of times Shawcross could or should have been booked.
Oh, I'm ridiculous.
You think, well,
yeah.
If he can actually flatten Knockhart knocking across him, you know, that's, you know, obviously that's not good enough for a yellow. So, you know, Glenn taking out his man is not good enough for a red.
Okay, but we did equalise, and Davy Purper does a Ricky Villa impression. So those who don't know who Ricky Villa is, FA
Look
Cup
it up.
Final 1981.
Yep.
Brilliant, fantastic bit of skill. Apart from he applied the finish, which Purper was put slightly wide.
He went bulldozing through everyone, didn't he? I mean, I think he was, I wouldn't mind betting he was wound up as well.
Yeah, I think they probably all were. I mean, to be fair, it probably the penalty, probably the non-penalty.
It fired up the crowd, didn't it?
Yeah, it fired up the crowd and obviously got the players going as well, because obviously they felt a sense of injustice and they did, you know, and visibly they stepped it up a gear. Because at that point, as soon as Stoke scored, I must admit, I thought, I turned to Matthew and I said, look, if we don't score in the next 15 minutes, I'm going home because this is going to finish 1-0.
What?
But
the point is he put the ball across to an unmarked Gross, and even then I think there was someone else who was unmarked. It went through two. It was actually appallingly defended.
Oh, it was.
It should have been saved.
For
should
two
have been stopped
teams
and
that are
saved.
There
was,
by,
it should have been marked, and you know,
for two teams that are managed by defenders, they're both going to be. Picking holes
well,
in
I
those
think if I'm Mark Hughes was a defender.
I'm sorry, no, he's not. He's
no,
a
he was
cycle,
a centre forward.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, parity didn't last very long.
Oh, God, that was awful. Right, okay. And I'm going to pick up from what the excellent report you read on North Stand Chat from Exile Seagull. Yes, I love Bruno to bits. He is the man. And what he's done today with the common goal thing is superb. The, you know, donating 1% of his salary to you know, good causes. But he really needs to buck his ideas up at set pieces, defending set pieces. I mean, he just turned his back and threw himself. I mean, it was, I don't know what he was doing. If that was a defender we didn't rate, we'd be screaming blue murder. He just turned his back and it just spooned up to, was it Zuma who came in and nodded it
and
home?
And nodded it high,
nodded
yeah.
It home. I mean, Bruno, you know, he didn't attack the ball. He actually turned his back on it and it hit his back. Yeah. That's how bad his defending was. And obviously with the game against Everton, and there was a couple of times where he's also been got away with it.
Yeah, he's, you know, I've people probably who know me a while have known I've never been an advocate of Bruno's defending full stop.
He's not been fleeced on the wing, really, has he?
No, he hasn't. But some of his, I think it was one of our friends was sort of commenting that, you know, he gets too tight, he does this sort of stuff that you're saying. And, you know, it's going to be found wanting, and it's starting to, I don't know, I mean, it's a shame.
Spending
maybe
too much time looking at his man, isn't
maybe
he?
Maybe Rossini isn't fully fit yet, which is why, because I think, you know, even Bruno, by his own admission, probably would have thought he might not be starting every game, but so far that's kind of how it's panned out.
As maybe, one of our Raw regulars commented back in the days under Hoopier when Bruno was being played in midfield, he said, "I'm really delighted he's being played in midfield because he's so far away from defending."
Oh yeah,
Who was that?
That would have been me.
Was that you? Was it?
That okay. I still stand by that, by the way.
Well, I say he doesn't really get skinned by wingers, does he? I mean, having said that, we're playing Man U. Of course, he's going to get skinned. But,
he doesn't really get skinned.
I mean, having said that, I feel like he does back off too much. But you know, I suppose you know there is a.
So did Adam Elab.
Well, yeah, there is. I'm sure some kind of training sort of thing behind that. It allows everyone else in the middle to get in place, but. You know, but for that defending, for those set pieces, you know, if you're going to attack the ball, attack the ball.
Okay, but we went in behind at half time. And
that Lee Mason got a nice reception, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. Or not, as a case.
Am I to take it you're not a fan, Alan?
It's, well, the thing is, I mean, it's not just that. I mean, it was. With Stoke City, I mean, I think they still are slightly tarnished by the Tony Pulis era.
Oh, they are, yeah.
Of the, you know, crash, bang, wallop stuff. Now, when Mark Hughes came in and took over, I thought they actually improved. And some of their football was, you know they've got the ball down on the ground a lot more, and a lot of their stuff sort of went. But what you've still got with them at the moment is an awful lot of gamesmanship. The whole sort of, not cheating as such, but the hoodwinking the ref, having a go at doing that. Yeah. I mean, early doors.
What you're saying is they're a little bit cheaty.
No, I'm not saying they're cheaty. That's what I'm saying. They're specifically not cheaty. But what I'm saying, like, for instance, you know, Shawcross. First thing Shawcross does in the game in the first 2 minutes is wind Murray up, and he's nose to nose with him.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking, you know, and to be honest, it worked. Mm.
Murray's a hothead anyway. Master of gamesmanship himself. So, I mean, we can't really.
To a point, but no, I mean, we're talking about getting one. That's talking about getting one over on your man. This is talking about getting one over on the ref. I'm thinking of, like, for instance, the nonsense towards the end of the game with Solly March, where
number 18 just kept falling over and winning a free kick, and you're like, blimey, if I can get paid 50 grand a week to fall over, I'll do
it
every week.
To be fouled by Solly March.
Yeah, it's not really. Come on, mate. He's a big lad.
He's only just got married. I mean, he looks little, much more than a child bride.
He just had to fall over and win a free kick. Oh, really?
It's that kind of stuff, and the point is that the referee's falling for it, and that's what I mean. That's what I mean about it. And I don't recall that being the sort of ridiculous stuff that we had in the Championship.
Yeah.
Having said that, I do feel that referees, as a general rule this season, not all of them, but as a general rule, have been decent.
Yeah. Yeah.
When someone does something like that.
Mike Dean was all right at Swansea.
I've got a very good friend.
Hang on. There's a tumbleweed.
Yeah, I said he was all right. I still hate him for what he did.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, I've got a couple of friends who would actually probably argue the toss over that one, but, you know.
But we did get an equaliser in the game, and it fell to El Pig. And.
You can't say that.
He's got a pig. What's called, you know?
El Pig.
It's easier to say than it's square, though.
Well, no, it's not. He just said he's scared her.
Okay.
Yes, no, it was good. Oh, actually, well, again, this was actually good work. I mean, I can't remember who it was that crossed it. I think it was Stevens that crossed it over to Murray.
Yeah, and that was a brilliant.
It was a brilliant cross because there was nothing else
brilliant
on
cross,
anyway.
But a great layoff from Murray as well. I mean, that was. I don't want to say world class, but that was brilliant.
And Izquierdo was there, and the little thing, I mean, it showed obviously Murray had calmed down a bit because, you know, if Murray still had the red mist, he'd probably be trying to smash that into the top of the stand.
If he still had the red mist, Hemed would have been on the pitch.
Well, I think there's that as well. So half time couldn't have come at a moment too soon, actually. But the little sort of tiny little through ball to Izquierdo, who tried to centre it, came back to him, and he just, you know, leapt on the rebound. I mean, great, that's what strikers do.
What did you make of his lack of celebration?
Don't care.
I don't care. I mean, but he sort of stood there, didn't he? And he sort of looked at his shirt as if to... And I know it's now part of this, oh, I'm not fully, you know, up and running yet, blah, blah. So I'd missed a couple of other chances and therefore, you know, when I scored, I didn't feel the need to celebrate. But
better than Stoke City's ones anyway.
Yes, precisely. Yeah, sure. Better than Stoke City's.
If given the choice of not celebrating and Stoke City's celebrations, give me Izquierdo's every day.
But honours even?
Yeah, I think it probably was a fair result.
Overall, I think it was a fair result. I'm glad... For me personally, I'm glad that the non-penalty didn't really decide the game, if that made sense. Because if we'd have equalised with a penalty, would we have then Grosser scored the equaliser? I don't know.
Time and motion. If
they turn a different corner and we never would have met.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if it was 0-1, I think...
Oh, yeah, really absolutely. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on our podcast, and of course on DAB. We are brought to you in association of oldfootballshirts.com, and I'm going to pass this over to Marcus Hancock. So I think you might get this one.
Okay, what we're looking at here is a white shirt with what looks like a red lung on one side and a green lung on the other side.
Yes,
it looks like a multicoloured X-ray, doesn't it?
It does. It's made by Puma.
Puma.
Can't quite make out the badge. I'm guessing...
He has photoshopped it.
Oh, has he? Okay. I'm guessing it looks... It's probably... I don't know.
I'm going to say Puma, Mexico.
I might say an African type shirt. Only because most African teams are made by Puma.
Really? Yeah. I saw that and I figured it out straight away. But
did you?
Without really...
Hang on. Let's study the badge a bit more. No,
a bit more photoshopped.
Yeah.
What's Uncle Phil given... Hang on. Uncle Phil is knackered...
It's not an Italian away shirt, is
it? He's not broke,
it is. It is because it's got the stars on it. Yeah, you can just imagine.
Okay.
You need to Photoshop better, Phil.
Just
study that badge.
I thought it was just his snot.
An Italian away kit, isn't it?
It's not an away kit.
Oh, is it?
It's not.
Oh, right.
What is it?
It goes, well, here's your shirt of the week. This is the 2011 to 2012 goalkeeper shirt of the Italian national team.
Right.
Italy is one of the most successful nations in the history of the World Cup. They've won it four times. Can anyone name the years?
Yes.
Yeah.
34, 38...
82
and
06.
Correct. And they have appeared in two further finals?
1970 and the other one. Hang on a second. That would be...
Oh, that would get me in France, was it?
No. Baggio.
Oh, of course, 94. USA 94, yeah, yes.
And they came third in 1990 and fourth in 1978.
I remember them in 78. Yes. They were rubbish then.
But they will not be adding to this record in the 2018 World Cup, having lost to Sweden in the meatball derby playoff.
Phil.
What?
Meatball derby.
IKEA versus Buitoni.
Cow meat.
The team is known as the Azzurri, taken from the Azzurro Saviola, Savoy blue colour, traditionally linked with the royal dynasty, which unified Italy in 1861. Two of Italy's most capped players are goalkeepers.
Zoff and Buffon.
Absolutely. Buffon heads the list of 175 caps.
Really? It's 175?
Wow, that's incredible.
That is a lot.
And Dino Zoff is the sixth most capped with 112 appearances.
Has he got a list of all the other highest capped players?
No. Buffon and Zoff captain the side as well.
Yes.
Italy have played England competitively 26 times over the years, with Italy winning 10 times, drawing 8, with England winning 8 times. So we're level.
One of my favourite ever games, and I think it was actually this day 40 years ago, or this week 40 years ago, it was a World Cup qualifier at Wembley. I think that England had already lost 2-0 to Italy in Rome, and this was in the days when there was only about 5 teams in your group, and we didn't go to the World Cup 78. Italy made it instead, but because we didn't get through on goal difference. But we played Italy and beat them 2-0. Brooking and Keegan scored, and the highlights are there on YouTube, and it was probably one of the best England performances I've ever seen. How it ended up 2-0 rather than 8, who knows? Facchetti should have actually been sent off for an absolute flying elbow. in Keegan's face. Brooking was on fire. Coppell and Barnes on the wings were on fire. The only person you didn't notice was Bob Latchford. You had to look it up to see that it was him playing.
Wow.
It was an absolutely brilliant performance. It was only
2-0. When you said that, I was thinking John Barnes wasn't playing.
Peter Barnes.
Peter Barnes, of course, yeah.
Peter Barnes and Steve Coppell playing on the wing.
But before we move on, though, Marcus, I mean, we've not known a World Cup in our living memories without an Italian side in it.
No, sometimes they're either really good or sometimes they do in England and stink out a tournament.
Because I remember,
I remember one year Barry Davis won World Cup and Italy needed to win to go through. And it was the one in Korea or whatever. And it was just, and Barry Davis, I liked his commentary anyway. And he's getting really grumpy. And Italy needed to score. And he's like, Italy need to score and they're not moving forward. When will they learn? Because he was obviously reverting back to the old Italian style of football.
Absolutely,
With the sort
it
of,
was
you know,
too
nil,
much of the Catenaccio. Yeah,
absolutely. But I just thought that made me chuckle.
More like Catenaccio.
So it's not just England that stink out tournaments, but the things of Italy, they have actually won the thing a few
times.
Absolutely,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, their pedigree's there, but at the end of the day, I mean, the manager, for all accounts, was... but could not get their tactics right. Is playing like
well, they're not the force they once were. I remember, you know, I mean, if you consider 82, even in 82, they come off the half their squad had come off the back of various match fixing scandals. Paolo Rossi had been banned for 2 years before the tournament.
Yeah,
and in their group games, you talk about stinking the place out. They drew all three of their group games, including a very very sort of young but resilient Cameroon, and. You know, then I think they just changed it around for the group games, and the second round was these ridiculous little mini leagues of three, and they win the same one as Argentina and Brazil.
That's right.
And that
was that classic
Brazil v Italy game. Paolo Rossi came to the party, a game in Barcelona at what was Espanyol's ground. Probably one of the greatest World Cup games ever. And you know, and there from there kicked on, and you could tell from that Brazil game that you knew that Italy were going to win it. And they faced West Germany in the final.
And nobody wanted
they
Germany
really
to
stuck
win,
the place
because
out.
Because of the Austria stitch-up.
Well, there was the Austria stitch-up and the Schumacher-Battiston
that's
thing.
Right, yeah. Course, yeah.
But I mean, when you look at other countries that didn't qualify as well, I mean, when you think of the world's best players, and, you know, you used to have the likes of Pirlo and...
Yeah.
And
well, you think George Best never played in the World Cup finals?
He was Gareth Bale.
More of Gareth Bale so far.
Although, Ian Rush.
Well, yes, absolutely decent.
Mark Hughes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they got so close, didn't they? I think there was a game they played against Romania, and I think they had to draw and they lost, or they had to win and they drew, or something like that. That was a qualifier where they beat Germany. The Wales side of the early 90s was actually pretty decent.
Okay. Right, but let's move on then. We'll look forward to the week ahead.
Deep joy.
First of all, this weekend we have Man United, which, you know, it is a glamour game, whichever way you like it.
I think we'll be lucky to get nil.
Yeah, I think we'll be lucky to get nil, but... I've said at the beginning of the season, and barring anybody getting sent off, as Murray very nearly did, I don't think there's going to be many teams that are going to hand us, you know, on a plate, you know, a real, you know, a shoeing. I think, you know...
One or two,
possibly a three-goal margin, might be a 4-1 or a 3-0, something like that. But I can't see... Like last season when Bournemouth went to Spurs and got knocked for six or whatever it was, or seven, or, you know, I can't see a scoreline like that happening.
They've already been beaten by Huddersfield this season.
And I don't think they're going to make that mistake twice.
Yeah, I mean, Mourinho played, from what I understand, a semi-weakened side.
And they didn't turn up anyway.
So... You know,
and even then, it was only 2-1. So they're.
But I don't want to take anything away from Huddersfield, as the old cliche goes.
Absolutely.
You know,
they scored more goals than Manchester United, which is the entire object of the exercise.
Yeah. But I mean, Newcastle went to Old Trafford and they got their backsides handed to them.
Yes, exactly. I don't think we will get our backsides handed to us. I think it will be. Well, was it? No, it was 5, wasn't it? It was 5-1 in the end.
I think it was
4-1.
Oh, it was 4-1.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe, as I say, the 3-goal margin, but. You know, our goal difference is very good, so we can afford a...
Well, it's level, isn't it?
So, a hiccup.
But it's a lot better than the teams below us.
Yeah, considerably.
There's two aspects of this. One is the hiding that we fear we might get.
Mm.
But the second thing is what the effect of that hiding will have going forward and who is next. I'd have so much rather have played Palace before Man U.
You know what, so would I. That, to me, would have been an ideal flip. But,
yes.
but we're going into, between now and Christmas, we're pretty much at two games a week now.
That's ridiculous.
I mean,
it's They do these one a week up with these international breaks, and then all of a sudden they cram it all in around Christmas and New Year. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous.
It's, it's a televisual thing, though, isn't it?
It's not necessarily. It's just badly planned. I mean, everything is geared around the European football. So there's half a dozen teams that, you know, and come next year, we've no idea whether how many teams will be left in the European competitions. It's all about, you know, there are no spare weeks. They'll prepared to put aside before December. yeah, but obviously, you know, if you're going to play one, you know, if one team's going to play, they've all got to play. You know, we're talking midweek.
So, I mean, there's been talk going into this game this weekend that Chris is going to make some changes. Like we mentioned at the top of the show that we've gone last four games unchanged. Do you think he might change formation slightly for this one?
I don't know. I mean, who you know, if you're a professional footballer, you want to play at Old Trafford, don't you?
So you always put your best side out.
I don't think Chris will be doing it to the detriment of the team. If anything, he'll be doing it to, you know, he'll be putting the team out that he thinks can win the game, or at least
contain the game, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I suppose people are questioning whether Knockaert should start because he's been a bit in and out, and maybe should March start instead of Knockaert. Or I don't know.
For me,
on this one, I'm just going to say, you know what, I'm going to trust Chris. Whatever team he picks is obviously the team that he feels is the right one. If he wants to rest Murray, maybe, to give Hemed a bit of a run out since his suspension.
That's the one I
maybe
would suggest.
But that's not a reflection on Glenn being poor, because he was excellent against Stoke. Red missed aside. I mean, that was a real centre forward.
He was desperate to get that 4-4 record as well, wasn't he?
But, you know, at the same time, Hemed could have a run out simply because, you know, let's be honest, save him for Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Who wouldn't like to see Glenn score against the Palace?
But if we're talking about any consideration, absolutely, any consideration to change of format, well, what format have they been practicing with? Because,
you know,
we've been playing every single game, you know, sort of set
same
up largely the same
yeah.
way with a very disciplined defence.
Yeah, unless they do something like with Bruno for Rossini, if Rossini's suddenly fit or something like
can't
that.
See
I can't
see it.
See it. But, yeah, I think I can't see it.
If you have that same sort of level of discipline, because let's face it, even when we play in Man City, and like I say, we were the rabbits in the headlights. It's, you know, Man City had a few chances, but it's not as though they were actually just walking through us on a whim.
Yeah,
you know, we made them work for that.
We did,
and we made Arsenal work. Yes, it looked regulation, and you know, it didn't look like we were going to score. March hitting the post, notwithstanding, but you know, from open play, it didn't look like we were going to score.
We might have been a little bit more threatening against Arsenal if we didn't have Izzy Brown up front. Not to take anything from Izzy away, but he's not a natural central forward in the sense of Murray or a Hemed.
Oh, he worked,
and our team is set up for the one sort of
logic dictates you put out the best side you can, and if that means that, you know, it's the fifth game, you know, unchanged, then do it. It's how. The principal thing we're looking at here is how that defence, which has to communicate excellently, plays. If you start tinkering with the defence, and when I say the defence, I mean the midfield as well, which also has a major role, and in fact even the forwards, which have a major role in defensive duties.
Absolutely.
If you start tinkering with that, especially at a side like Manchester United.
Before Stoke scored, did you see that great header off the line that Murray made from one of their corners? It was a proper centre-back header off the... I mean, it was, you know... Right, backing up Alan's point about...
But Murray's been doing that all his career.
Actually,
we're talking about Glenn Murray, actually, I mean, there was an interesting point which was made this week by... which will lead on to the next thing, which was... Steve Parish was saying that he was actually admitted making a mistake in
good,
selling
his problem.
Good,
his
not
problem. Ours.
Yeah,
don't care.
Right. Yep. You know, but then he said his managers didn't rate. It's the same thing with our friend Gus and the Tony Bloom thing. You know, Tony Bloom's been on record a number of times, and even in the latest club DVD at the end of the last season, which ended after the Wigan game, not Aston Villa.
Fair enough.
True, it did. Literally. Last three games, no mention at all. Anyway, but Tony Bloom said, you know, I didn't want to get rid of Glenn Murray, but, you know, I had to back my manager, and Poirier didn't rate him.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Parrish. Warnock and the other fella, Pardew, didn't rate Murray, so... Parrish did what?
Yeah, absolutely. No. You go.
A chairman should do and back their manager.
Absolutely.
Okay, fine.
Absolutely.
You know, if that's how it is, that's how it is.
Okay. Well, we are playing Crystal Palace this week, and it's It's not a game I look forward to.
No one does. They're not looking forward to it. We're not looking forward to it. Yeah. I mean, everything sort of seems to point to the fact that because they've had an appalling season and we're doing okay, that we're actually going to tonk them. It really doesn't work that way.
Especially
not in derbies. I mean, when we played them first time at the Amex, we thought, you know, even the Palace fans were saying, oh, it's going to be 3-4-5, you know, and then we were great for the first 15, 20 minutes stopped playing and then just got absolutely shoveled.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You cannot, these are games you just cannot call.
No, I mean, I think it's nice that we're on a kind of still a level playing field, but we're still a few years behind Palace in Premier League experience and that sort of thing. It's a bit like when we went up from League One to the Championship. They've been in the Championship for a few years. We were riding the crest of the wave.
Yeah.
You know, things even themselves out, and maybe if we're still playing each other in 5 years' time in the Prem, we'll probably start beating them, but at the moment.
But the last time we played them in the top flight was April 1981.
Okay, yeah, go through your pieces of paper.
Wasn't that away at Selhurst?
It was. We won 3-0.
And that was 81. A result. Apparently, if you listen to a couple of the older sort of GDC members, that was a result that sent Palace down. So that's
better still. But there was a great. Obviously, then there's the time that I don't think it was the most recent time. It's not the most recent time we played them up there. But the last time we won up there, oh boy, did we have fun in our all white kit.
Yeah. And one man that played in that game was Paul Reid, who the Albion Royal Down Under caught up with earlier this year.
Yeah, I've got really good memories of that game. I think everyone knows that Brighton won the game 1-0 with a Paul McShane goal, but I still believe it was an own goal that game. But anyway, it was still a goal. We were actually struggling for a bit of form, I remember, at the time, and went up to Selhurst Park and got a really good result. And did not realise the rivalry until supporters spoke to me after the game and told me all about it. And, you know, after the game, I had numerous phone calls from friends who had been at the game. They were travelling back on the train, and some of them were in pubs, and they were telling me that it was going crazy in the pubs. And, you know, we don't condone it, but there might have been a few fights going on when they were going from Selhurst to the train station. So, yeah, as I said, I didn't really realise the rivalry until after that game. But you know, I've played in front of big crowds before, in grand finals, even the playoff game in 2004, and that game against Palace, I still remember very fondly, just because of the atmosphere at the game. I'm not sure what the crowd they get there. I think it's only in the high 20s at the time, but I just remember the atmosphere was unbelievable, especially with the supporters being so close to the ground. So, yeah, I've got really good memories, and it's probably up there with one of the three highlights of my career, really. I'm not just saying it. As I said, I speak to a lot of people about it, and as I said, I hadn't experienced that sort of atmosphere at a game, and, you know, it was really great.
That was Paul Reid talking to the Albion Roar Down Under, which you can catch the full version of over on our podcast.
Even now, 12 years later, he sounded absolutely terrified. I mean, I love the fact he actually threw in the fact that there was a few bits of scuffles between the ground and the station. And, you know, I think he eventually got the kind of the British, or certainly the Brighton Palace culture of, I mean, when we had Indigo Calder on a few years ago, he said he didn't realise what the rivalry between Brighton and Palace is. And I think, there's a few times you've got put straight.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing how much the media don't know about it, apparently, judging by the request.
Media not knowing about it is one thing. It's when the players don't.
It's when the players don't. Although some of the media do, and I remember even a few years ago, 442 wrote that famous line about, you know, there's a hatred between Brighton and Palace fans that's rarely seen outside the Balkans or something like that. It was so the media are aware. I'll tell you who aren't aware, and it does annoy me. Sky TV, they're still trying to make Brighton and Southampton and Brighton and Bournemouth some sort of local rivalry derby.
It's El Clásico, you know.
Whatever they want to brand it as,
it's the M23 derby. No. I mean, of all things you're going to have a derby about, is a sodding motorway.
It's not, you know, it's Bournemouth. No one gives a monkeys about Bournemouth, and Southampton have got Portsmouth next.
Yeah, quiet.
But I mean, it's crazy.
Bournemouth can have Yeovil if they feel
I mean, for other derbies, which are classed as the classic derbies, Ipswich and Norwich.
Ipswich and Norwich are miles apart.
They're further away. Newcastle and Sunderland, further away.
Absolutely, but of course...
Newcastle and Sunderland are a lot closer.
But Newcastle... yeah, but suffer
15 miles.
Norwich and Ipswich is probably because obviously they're one Suffolk
the
team.
Yeah, exactly, East Anglia, one in Norfolk.
So you know that's the low, unless they pick on Cambridge or something maybe. But,
no,
you
know. Cambridge and Peterborough, yeah, and then exactly. even they're sort of like 30, 40 miles apart.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's the other thing I was going to say about the Paul Reid thing was there was Andrew Hawes doing the commentary, and that was brilliant because if you remember in that game, I think it was Clinton Morrison disallowed goal.
He did, yeah.
And he was going along. It was along the line because I was listening to the commentary, and it was along the lines of. Well, if you're listening at home, it's something like, you know, you can stop having your heart attack now because the linesman's flag is up.
My mouth because I remember that game. I was there, but you know how sometimes I like to hang out with the home fans, like at Hereford, where I sort of was in with the home fans and not the away fans. Well documented. Attila sat next to me and said, why was you? Long story, couldn't get a ticket for the away end. So my uncle lived in Gloucester, so I got tickets for the Hereford.
You know, I know that bit, but anyway.
Palace. Anyway, so I was in the Selhurst end, you know, the big, because work had season tickets for Palace, and again couldn't get a ticket, so I took the work tickets, hardly expecting us to win, and obviously we did. So interesting.
But did your eyeballs nearly sort of burst out of your head while you were trying to keep quiet?
Yeah, absolutely. That was very difficult.
But I mean, that game was another classic bit of commentary, and over on our Facebook group, join in. There's all sorts of things we've asked.
Basically asked everyone, what is your favourite piece of Albion-related commentary? I think that sort of a lot of people have actually zeroed in on the... I'm not going to do it on the microphones because I will break them, but I think it's Jim Proudfoot screaming Stuart Storer for the last ever game, the goal at the Goldstone. Marcus, off the top of your head, I know we've foisted it upon you, but what's your favourite piece of Albion-related commentary? Was that it?
That is probably it, followed by the Robbie Rhinehart has scored, Robbie Rhinehart has equalised at Hereford.
We go even mad.
Even though obviously being at the Hereford game, but hearing it afterwards,
yeah.
You know, wow, you know, that really... I used to play it in my car, actually. I used to have a tape recording of it, and I used to play it back in my car if I was feeling...
If you've ever heard the whole lot, again, it's on YouTube. Yeah. If you've heard the lot, there's one bit where, you know... Tony Millard is so getting in. We're talking about the Hereford game.
Yeah.
He's so getting into this.
Yeah.
Screaming, just far short of screaming blue murder at a misplaced pass. You know, Maskell plays the ball that way. Why he didn't play it out to Minton, Christ alone knows. Yeah. And Jerry Ryan's in the background swearing his head off.
That was the funniest thing of Jerry Ryan's celebration as well.
Oh, you hear the
Which was... we can't say it either. Exactly
no, we can't, no.
I mean, there's been some classic albums. I mean, one of my personal favourites was our good friend Adam Virgo, of course.
And, absolutely.
You're not there yet, Swindon fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In it goes.
And exactly. JC, you know, it's the stuff of dreams or whatever it was.
Yeah, that was Limbrook Cup's goal, yeah. And you've got... Oh, lots.
Not mentioning the cup final because that's not classic.
I was just going to mention awesome. It is classic for the wrong reasons.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you go over to our Facebook page, there's all sorts of stuff going on over there, and we're doing top fives and all sorts of stuff. So go over there. It's an ongoing community. It's great. So, but that's all we've got time for. So thank you to Marcus Hancock, as usual.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Alan Wares. I'm Amy Packham, and we will be back next week. This has been the Albion Raw. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Cheers. Bye.